This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Maiken Scott. This interview is from our episode about finding love. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Dating coach Logan Urie says a lot of people seem to think that love is this magical chemical thing that can't be broken down into its pieces. But she says there absolutely is a science to finding love, and she has the credentials to make that statement. She is the director of relationship science at the dating app Hinge, the on-screen dating coach on the new Netflix show The Later Daters, and the author of How to Not Die Alone, the surprising science that will help you find love. So let's say I'm about to embark on finding a mate and I'm looking for a real relationship. I'm looking for a serious relationship. What are some things I should think about before I even put up a profile?
Yes, I love that you asked what should you do before you even start the profile, because I agree that there's a lot of work to do before. So a lot of the work that I do with my coaching clients is understanding the patterns that are holding them back from finding love. So we do this really interesting exercise in our coaching where they ask people in their life, their family and their friends, why do you think I'm single? And it's often a very vulnerable exercise for people, but it produces really interesting results. So, of course, sometimes you have family and friends that say, you're perfect. There's just no great guys out there. But a lot of times you hear things like, you're too picky. You travel too much for work. You have unrealistic expectations. You're not over your ex. And so I love starting with this idea of what are the blind spots that we're not even aware of. Then I talk to them about their relationship history, and I really try to understand, okay, so they've had a number of relationships, but all of them have been people that they started off as friends with. Okay, well, that seems to be something that really works well for them. How can we have them do that more? Or it seems like they get into long-distance relationships, but those don't work out. And so really understanding what hasn't been going right in the past, what has gone well in the past, and then how can we change that and make a plan for the future? So for somebody who is just getting back out there or maybe hasn't dated at all, I would get really clear on what are you looking for? And that's not things like how tall somebody is or what color eyes they have, but do you have time for something serious right now? Are you looking to build a long-term connection? Are you actually just looking to get to know a lot of people and figure out who you want to be with? And so much inner work happens before you even create that profile.
And then how important is the profile itself, how we present ourselves on these sites?
Profiles are really important. It's almost as if you were going to buy a billboard on the side of a highway. You get this limited amount of space to express who you are. And so for that billboard, you would want to put a lot of effort into the picture and what you write. And the same thing is true on your profile. And so my advice for people is to do an exercise I call the three big things. So what are three big things that you really want to express about yourself on your profile? So it might be that you love the San Francisco 49ers, that you're really into cooking, and that you love to spend time with your family. Make sure through your different pictures and prompts that you're really expressing those things. And sometimes I find that I look at somebody's profile and it's all photos of them and their dog, or all photos of them at anime conventions. And while those are things that they're passionate about, I'm not really getting their full story. And so your profile ideally has a mixture of humor and vulnerability and really gives us a sense or paints a picture for us of what it would be like to date you.
Logan says people should avoid getting stuck in endless messaging back and forth on the apps.
I really recommend people get to the date faster than they think. So a problem that I've identified over the last few years is pen palling, when people are going back and forth for way too long and, you know, learning everything they can about this person, when in reality, that's what the date is for. And so at Hinge, we found that after 3 days of chatting is actually the sweet spot of coordinating a date. And you can hop on FaceTime, you can talk on the phone. There's a lot of things that you can do if you still want to gut check your connection a little bit more. But instead of building up a fantasy of somebody in your head from weeks of chatting, it's a really good strategy to get to the date sooner and see if you have that in-person connection.
I know people who have all kinds of different kind of no-go zones where they're like, oh, this person doesn't like the right kind of books, or they love country music, I hate country music. They have sort of all these immediate factors that weed people out. Is that a bad strategy?
This is a topic I'm really passionate about. I love to help people identify the difference between deal breakers and pet peeves. So deal breakers are something that truly represent a fundamental incompatibility. So it might be something like you have asthma and this person is a smoker, or you're of one religion, this person is of another, and you both want to raise kids in your own religion. That does seem like something that would make it hard for you to be together long term. But far too often we have pet peeves, things like this person chews with their mouth open, or this person wears socks with sandals that perhaps you don't like and you wish were different, but there's no research telling me that those things are going to mean that you can't have a successful relationship long term. And so I find as people get older, they add more and more things to their deal breaker list that are actually pet peeves. And so if you can really forget about the things that don't matter and actually double down on the things that do, that is going to get you closer to finding this dream relationship.
I was laughing because socks and sandals is definitely a deal breaker. Sorry.
Is it?
Yes.
That's so funny. Okay, well, I'm glad you didn't see me this morning.
So, yeah, that's a good point, though. I think sometimes we start focusing on the superficial things that are really meaningless in the long run, right? And we might be cutting ourselves out of a whole group of people that, you know, we could get along with really well if we gave it a chance.
Absolutely. And one of the biggest things I found for this is height filters. So on dating apps, you can say the minimum height of somebody that you go out with. And so oftentimes you have straight women who are setting their height filters at 6 feet or taller. And we know that in the United States, only 14% of men are 6 feet or taller. So right away from the beginning, you're excluding 86% of people. And then you might be wondering, well, you know, where's my husband? Or how come there's nobody new to connect with? And so really by expanding those filters and understanding that if you were at a bar and you met a great guy and he was 5'9" and you were both sitting down and you didn't know his height till you stood up, you wouldn't stop the conversation. You would be excited about him. And so just understanding that expanding your filters and being more open to different types of people is one of the best ways to date like a scientist and to really get this result that you're looking for.
So you've already said it's better to get to a date or a more in-person meeting more quickly. So let's say we've made it to the date and there is no, quote, spark. This is something I hear from my friends all the time. You know, I had a date with this person and there just wasn't anything there. What's that all about?
That's something that I'm definitely hearing as well. And I've been hearing this for a long time. And so it's this idea of people going on a date, especially someone who's maybe a little bit more burnt out or dating for a long time and says, yeah, they were great, but I just didn't feel the instant chemistry or the fireworks. I just didn't feel the spark. And so I love to encourage people to really look beyond that. And I've found that there's three myths of the spark. So the first one is that if you don't have instant chemistry, it can't build over time. And we know that that's not true. Only 11% of couples say that they even experience love at first sight. And for many people, it's about getting to know somebody at work or somebody in your extended friend group, and the chemistry builds over time. The second myth of the spark is that if you feel it, it's a good thing, and that's not always the case. Sometimes somebody themselves is just very sparky, very charismatic, and they actually give that feeling to a lot of people. And so you think it's something special between you and that person, but it's more about who they are. And sometimes it can actually be that they're unclear about their interest in you, and what you're experiencing as chemistry is actually anxiety and alarm bells. And the third myth of the spark is that if you have it, then the relationship is viable. And that's also not true. I know so many couples who stayed in the wrong relationship because they met the quote unquote right way. And so it's enough to get you into a relationship, but it's not enough to keep you in it. And instead, I really recommend that people go after the slow burn. And those are people who may not be as initially charming or life of the party, but the more you get to know them, the more you like them, they really get better over time. And so if you have no interest in somebody on the first date, it's probably not a good idea to go out with them again. But if you could see the beginnings of interest, even if it wasn't that knock you off your feet spark, it's a good idea to pursue that.
So Logan says the spark is overrated and she does not believe in soulmates.
My philosophy is that there's no such thing as a soulmate. I think we can make a lot of relationships work with a lot of different people. And so I've been with my husband now for almost 10 years and I really love our relationship, but I could also imagine that I could have had a completely different life with a different person. And so I embrace the life that I have, but I also understand that there were choices I made along the way that led to this life and I could have written a different love story with somebody else. I don't think it's a problem to believe in soulmates if it propels you into relationships with an open mind. So there's a psychologist named Renee Franiunk, and she found that people either believe that being happy in a relationship is all about finding the right person, or they believe that relationship success comes from putting work in. And so when I work with people who I call romanticizers, I try to shift them from this idea that it's all about finding the perfect person. If you find them, then everything's going to be effortless and easy, to this other thing called the work it out mindset, where they understand that they need to put effort in. And so I think it's only a problem when you end up giving up on relationships too quickly because you believe if this were my soulmate, then it should be effortless. And that's just not the case.
So what are some hallmarks then of a successful date? You mentioned the beginnings of interest. What else should I see or feel?
When I was doing research for my book, I spoke to a lot of people who seem to have an unusual amount of success on first or second dates, and I was interviewing them. And what I found was that these people are attractive, but I wouldn't say, oh, of course, it's just the hottest people who the most people want to see again. What it really was is that they were fun. They were really having experiences with the person that they went out with, and they were meeting up. They were very present. They were in the moment, and they had these open conversations talking about things that were going on in their lives or new things happening in the world. They were not sitting there and conducting themselves as if they were in a job interview. That's one of the biggest mistakes that I see people making, is that they go there with the pursuit of information. I'm here to understand you and to evaluate you and to see if you're good enough. And instead, a first date should really be about, how does it feel to be around this person? What side of me did they bring out? Did they make me laugh? Did I feel attractive in their presence? How did my body feel around them? And so really tuning into the stuff that does matter, how it feels to be around that person, versus those questions like, where did you go to school, that are much more of the job interview type questions.
How do you prepare people for the disappointments that come with dating? You know, there are these times when people think, oh, this went really well, and then it didn't, or they don't hear from the person again. So there is a lot of potential heartbreak there too.
It's true. Rejection is such a painful part of dating. And I think for those of us who aren't actively dating, we forget what it feels like, because you match with somebody, you get your hopes up, you get so excited, you meet up with them, you're attracted to them, you think it goes well, and then either you never hear from them or it doesn't work out. And it's truly so painful. It's like somebody spent time with me and didn't want to see me again. And so I have so much empathy for that experience. One thing I try to do is make the whole dating ecosystem better by recommending that people don't ghost. And so I have these scripts that people can save to their phone, just things like, it was great to meet you, I enjoyed talking about such and such, but I don't think we're a romantic connection. I do think that at least hearing from somebody that they're not interested in seeing you again makes it easier than when somebody ghosts you and you don't hear from them at all. But in terms of the emotional experience, what I recommend to people is just thinking about the fact that it's painful and it hurts, but now you have the information that you need to move on, and you can always use this to inform the next one. So, wow, what I really found I liked about this person was that they have a lot of side hobbies and they're really passionate about what they do. So that's something I'm going to pay attention to in the future. Or this person was different than the types of people that I normally go after. So I'm going to open my mind to the future for different types of people to date. So acknowledging the pain and the rejection, but also understanding that it's better to know how somebody feels about you, and then you can use that information to date differently in the future.
Talk a bit more about ghosting, because it's sort of a disease of our time in all kinds of realms, not just dating. And it does leave you with this shadow of doubt and wondering where you're just like, oh my gosh, I just want to figure out what happened here and what went wrong. So it just puts claws in you more than it should, really, just because that other person didn't say anything at the end. So talk a bit more about how that's become so prevalent.
Yeah. So I first really thought about this topic about 10 years ago when I interviewed Sherry Turkle, who's a wonderful researcher and professor from MIT. And she was talking about how we really had a lack of empathy because when you're digitally communicating with somebody, you don't have to see the impact of your words on them. And so, for example, she gave this story about how this grandson wanted to cancel on his grandparents and just send them a text. And his parents said, no, if you want to do that, you have to call them to hear the disappointment in their voice. And so I think as digital communication has changed, we've become a lot less empathetic. And so in my research on ghosting, I've found that the number one reason why people ghost is that they feel like they don't want to hurt the person's feelings. Yet we know that 86% of people say, I'd rather you tell me. It will hurt in the beginning, but I'd rather know. And so there's this disconnect where most people don't want to be ghosted, but most people do ghost because they feel like it's awkward to reject somebody outright. And so I've found that ghosting is increasing because with Gen Z or even Gen Alpha, people who really did go through some pivotal years during the pandemic, I found that there's just people struggle more with their communication and there's just a lot of awkwardness around these situations. And so I find that people are more sensitive to rejection. They are having a harder time being upfront with somebody. And so this is something that I hope to really work on and tackle more in the future is arming people with those social skills to know how to say to somebody, it was great to meet you, but I'm not interested, instead of leaving somebody in that pool of ambiguity of ghosting that's really painful.
Now, sometimes a lot of people, I think, find themselves attracted to, quote, trouble. You know, they have this thing where they're like, ooh, I know this person is a terrible fit for me and everything about them is crazy. But, oh, that was so much fun. You know, so there is this kind of attraction to want to tumble into that rabbit hole. What's that about?
Yes. Yeah, so there's really interesting research in psychology going back many years to psychologist B.F. Skinner that helps illustrate why we're interested in people who may be hot and cold with us. And so in this experiment, there were two pigeons, and pigeon one was in a cage where every time they pressed a lever, they got food. And this is called a system of continuous reinforcement. And then there's pigeon two, who is in a different cage that also has a lever. And for a few minutes, the lever operates as it did for the first bird. Every time it presses the lever, they get a food pellet. But after a few minutes, things change. And instead of continuing to reward pigeon two with food every time it presses the lever, the experimenter shifts to a system of random or partial reward. And that means sometimes the pigeon has to press the lever 5 times or 13 times or 20 times. And what happens is the second bird becomes obsessed with pressing the lever. In the final stage of the experiment, the food is cut off for both birds. The first bird figures it out quickly and stops pressing it, but the second bird keeps pressing the lever until it literally collapses from fatigue. And what we know is that pressing the lever without any reinforcement represents this addictive behavior. It's how slot machines work too. You never know if you're just one play away from winning big. So when we date somebody who's inconsistent, it does the same thing to our brains. When you first start dating them, they give you tons of time and attention. That's that continuous reinforcement. You press the lever, you get the food. Some people keep giving it to you, but certain people pull away. And sometimes they're into it and sometimes they're not. And that's the partial reward schedule. So if you are getting what you want from somebody, but only some of the time, it really becomes addictive. And that's the thrill of, are they going to text me or not? And what's a problem is that the people who make great long-term partners are the ones who are consistent. But oftentimes our brains code those people as boring and the other people as exciting. And so the important thing to do here is to recognize when that behavior that feels exciting is actually holding you back and frustrating you and reframing it so that you can go after those consistent people who will make great long-term partners.
And I guess we have to settle for ourselves if we are into the chase, or the reward.
Yes. And I think that that is a very hard thing for most people to figure out for themselves. Because if your definition of love is I chase somebody and hope that they fall for me, then that inconsistent reaction from the person is what you're expecting. Oh, I need to prove my worth to them. I need to show up in all these different ways. Oh, they pulled back. That's what's always happened in love. And that's often the anxious attachment style. And then there's people who are avoidant attached, and their definition of love is that somebody's going to smother me and take away my independence. So when somebody chases them, that's what they expect. And it's only when these people either become more secure themselves or date a secure partner that they understand that there's actually a different way in which you have comfort with independence and comfort with intimacy. And it's not about the chase and pulling away. It's two people who are moving towards each other in a pace that feels earned and sustainable, and you're both choosing each other. It's not about rewards and chases and pigeons.
Logan Urie is the director of relationship science at the dating app Hinge and the on-screen dating coach on the new Netflix show, The Later Daters. Her book is called How to Not Die Alone, the surprising science that will help you find love.